Have you been wanting to start a podcast but not quite sure where to start? If so, I'd love for you to check out my online course called How to Start a Podcast in 24 Hours. Here we'll dive into all of the things you need to get started. Things like how to name your podcast, which microphone to use, how to edit, and lots more. Go to realdavidezell.com to learn more. That's realdavidezell.com to learn more.
Freedom over fame. Freedom over cycle stays the same.
Welcome in, everyone, to How to Ride a Roller Coaster. I'm your host, David Ezell. Here, we'll talk with business owners and founders on what it's like to ride the roller coaster known as entrepreneurship. How to navigate the highs, the lows, as well as tangible tips that you can use right now to kickstart your business or idea. Let's get to it. Welcome to this episode of How to Ride a Roller Coaster. I'm David Ezell, and today I'm joined by Max Weider. Max is the co-founder of Celsi, which is a smart oven and freezer for autonomous cooking. What's going on?
Not too much, but thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How's your week so far?
Been busy. Lots of conversations. Actually, this is my third podcast I'm recording this week, so it's been a busy week.
Man, no rest for the weary, for sure. And like I said, I appreciate your time. I really am super excited to learn more about Celsi, learn more about where it came from. It feels like it's just the right time for something like this too. So before we get into that, let's get a little bit of your background and kind of where, how you got to this point, and then let's start diving into Celsi.
Yeah, so I'm actually an aerospace engineer. That's my full-time job, because got to pay the bills somehow as an entrepreneur.
No doubt.
So I work as a contractor for NASA. My day job is doing project management and engineering for a probe we're going to shoot over to Jupiter next year. I could say it's not rocket science, but
but it kind of is. Yeah. Holy cow, that's awesome.
Basically, Celsi came out of trolling a friend. If I'll be honest with you, six years ago now, our friend's oven died. And he's like sending me and my co-founder tons of messages saying like, oh, do I get the one with Wi-Fi or the specialized pizza tray or temperature probe? And he's throwing all these bells and whistles around. I was like, it's only $1,500. Well, then that's when $1,600. I'm like, for $1,500, your oven should have like robotic arms that open your fridge, get your food, and just cook it for you.
Right.
And we just like, We just like that light bulb went off in that moment. We're like, that'd be awesome. And I have two engineering degrees. My co-founder has two engineering degrees. Our friend has two engineering degrees. We had like three decades of experience between the three of us. And we're like, okay, let's just make it happen. We got together that weekend, whiteboarded the whole concept out. And well, then we realized, well, we have a product here, but is there a problem for this product to solve, right? And kind of most of the time you see startups, it's, here's a problem. What's the solution to solve this problem? So we wanted to make sure that we weren't going to start a company and do all that based on just having a really cool thing. That's not a good foundation of a startup. So we spent the next 6 months doing all the proper due diligence, right? We did all the business canvas, wrote a business plan, did interviewing of customers and all that. And what we found is there's a massive problem. Honestly, it's universal, the problem that we're solving. So much so that it's every person we talked to was a different use case of a problem it solved for them. So what we found was that our product was just needed, as you said. Now is the right time. Everyone could use this. And the thing is, everyone could use it for a completely different reason. You'll talk to someone, they're like, I would use it for X. And you're like, I didn't even think about that. But so...
Is the main thing that you guys kind of put out to set and to fix that pain point? It was, and I've noticed just on your website, it's giving back a lot of your time so that you don't have to worry about cooking. Is that just kind of the baseline and the foundation of where you guys want to go?
Yeah. So what we had to kind of aggregate everything backwards. And so what we found is essentially there's a threefold problem. It's kind of a triangle or a threefold Venn diagram of problems. It's time, money, and quality. And right now, almost every solution on the market, you're only getting two. You always have to sacrifice one of the three, right? If you cook at home, you're getting good quality at a low cost, but it's 17 days a year of your time, right? If you go and eat out, well, it's good quality. It's not as much time commitment, but it is very expensive to get takeout, right? And if you add Uber Eats and DoorDash on there, it more than doubles the price. And there was an article, a study out of London that 8 in 10 drivers have admitted to eating your food. So
perfect.
That lovely nugget on there. Next time you order Uber Eats.
Why are my fries only half of them there?
No, they didn't give you fries. But yeah, so then the final thing is quality. And quality is an interesting one, because how do you judge quality of food? So there's we judge quality in two different areas, right? The nutritional quality of the food and then the end product quality of the food. And what I mean by that is, how does it turn out? If you put something in the microwave, you get one result, and it is soggy. You could never put pizza in an oven. I wouldn't put a steak in an oven. You're not going to get a crisp shell or anything like that. But it saves time, and it's cheap. And then fast food is how you sacrifice nutritional quality. Again, fast and cheap, but not good quality. And actually, it's not even that cheap anymore. Big Mac meal is like $14. So, you know.
Right. Yeah, nothing is anymore.
But so we wanted to solve all three of those. We want to be the center point on that threefold Venn diagram.
Yeah, and it just seems, like I said, it seems like the perfect time as well, just because everything is so on demand and I want it kind of right now, or I want it to kind of fit around my schedule. You know, our son has soccer practice from 5:30 to 7, and then I fall kind of into that category like you were talking about. Okay, well, it's fast food. I'm gonna lose out on the quality, or I'm going to lose out because it's going to be too expensive for a Wednesday night. So I love the idea that you can just come home and something that hits all three of those categories can be ready.
Yeah. Yeah. Our basic idea is, it's like having a personal chef without paying for it, right? You on your phone, just say, I want you peruse the options available in the onboard freezer and you pick the meal and you say, I want it at this time. We have plans for future things of smart scheduling with AI, where it actually tracks your location. So if you have to make an extra stop or get stuck in traffic, it takes that into account when cooking your meal. So when you get in the door, it hasn't been sitting there for a while.
Right?
And so it's like that personal butler cooking service type concept, where you can follow your craving. You don't have to know at 4 in the morning when you leave for the office what you're going to eat for dinner that night. You have 5 options in there of what you could eat. Or when you have your teenage kid get home from school, they have Hot Pockets waiting for them or something.
And I'll make sure to put a photo of what it looks like for those that are watching on YouTube. But if somebody's listening on a podcast, do us a favor, just kind of explain and kind of lay out what it looks like, how it actually functions, how it would sit on the counter, just kind of that visual into what the whole product looks like.
So imagine you use the full vertical space between your counter and your above countertop cabinets, right? So we use that full vertical space, which a lot of appliances don't use. They like to use a larger bird's eye view footprint. So we wanted to use vertical space because what that lets us do is have a smaller footprint. So we're actually the same depth as those above counter cabinetops. So you still get the front of the countertop space in front of it. And then it's only about 19 inches wide, which is actually less wide than a typical toaster oven or microwave. And when you look at it, it's just two doors. And if you open the left door, then it's a freezer. It's got 5 shelves in it. It's the size of the meals. And as you load the meals, you get a beep, and it's scanning the meals as it loads it, and it just shows up on your phone. And then the right side is just a little door. The whole right side opens, but there's a little door because the right side is actually an elevator shaft. And the top is where the oven is. And what happens when you cook, normally the doors are closed, so you don't see any of this, but there's a door that separates the free inside. There's a door that separates it. That door opens. An elevator comes down to the appropriate shelf where the meal that you want is. It de-lids the meal, takes it out of the freezer, puts it on the elevator. The elevator goes up into the oven side and it starts cooking it. And now the oven is a dynamic oven, right? So it can do convection, conduction, air frying, broiling, defrosting, bottom heating, top heating, a multitude of different cook styles. But what's nice is when it scanned your meal when you loaded it, it also scanned the different style of how to cook it and for how long to cook each of those styles for. So completely hands off, it's doing all this for you completely autonomously. And so when you open the door, there's a little window and your food's just sitting in there on the elevator waiting for you to pull it out. Once you pull it out, elevator goes back up into its position.
Is there cleanup with this? I mean, does anything, like if it overflows, is there cleanup like on that oven side door?
Nope. So what we've done is we've done a Keurig model, right? So everything goes in a standardized tray. So we work like Keurig with multiple brands, and they all put their food in the same style tray. And we've designed the tray for that purpose so that there isn't overflow. So there isn't splattering and anything like that. And all you have to do at the end of the day is, like Keurig, when your meal's done, you open the freezer side to pull the lid out from the delidding. You put that in the recycling bin, then you load your next meal up to take that slot if you want to. And on the oven side, you take the aluminum tray out with your meal in it, you eat it, you rinse it, you recycle it. So the whole idea is we're trying to be cost conscious here, environmentally conscious, right? So we use all recyclable materials, including for the shipping part of the frozen meals to your house. There's no styrofoam, all cardboard-based insulation. The unit itself is conservative energy. So the reason is the freezer is the size of the meals is so that you're not using extra energy to cool a whole giant box. And same with the oven. The oven is only the size of a meal so that you're not preheating an oven for 15 minutes the size of a turkey dinner for a tray that's, you know, holds about 2 pounds of food, which you designed it for.
Are you eager to dive into the world of podcasting but not sure where to start? Look no further than How to Create a Podcast in 24 Hours. This dynamic course is your ultimate guide to launching a podcast from scratch in just one day. Learn the ins and outs of podcast creation, from content planning to recording, editing, and promotion. Head over to realdavidezel.com to grab your spot in this transformative course. Unleash your creativity, share your passion, and connect with your audience. Start your podcasting journey today with How to Create a Podcast in 24 Hours. And so you talked a little bit about the aha moment, you and your friends sitting around saying how I wish this thing existed. Yeah. What was that next day like? Like, so when you'd been started marinating on it, you whiteboarded it out a little bit. But I mean, like, what were some of those early days like when it's like, man, did it feel just overwhelming? Or was it like, no, I mean, we've got this. We've got the collective brain power and we know what we want to do. There may be some people we have to reach out to, but what did that feel like?
So my friends and I actually, we had this group chat, because this actually all happened over group chat. We had always been talking about starting a business. It started when we were in our 20s and said, we need to buy a bar, like all 20-year-olds do. And as we got into our late 20s and turned into, let's start a business, and we would throw, it basically turned into people would throw ideas out there. The other two would Google it and ruin that person's day because it already existed. And this was a time finally where I threw an idea out there and they Googled it and they had nothing to throw back. It was overwhelming because I was just like, this is such a good idea. I would just start throwing spaghetti on there, like, oh, we can do this, we can do that. And that's why we got together that weekend, right? This happened on like a Wednesday or Thursday or something. And that Saturday, we got together, we got a whiteboard, and we just started designing. Because we're like, wow, let's just get all the ideas out there and see how this can be a reality.
Was prototyping it and building like that MVP model, was that difficult? I mean, like, as you're doing it, because this is the first one. And like you said, there's so many different use cases for it, but you kind of have to get it in something that could fit on a counter. You have to make it something, like you said, that's energy supportive, all of those different things. I mean, was that building that MVP kind of difficult, or how was that?
So we're 6 years in now, right? Hardware, again, I take my NASA experience for this. When you launch a satellite into space, you get one shot. If it doesn't work, you don't get to go up there and fix the loose wire or tweak something or swap a part, right? It has to work. And we're viewing that when it comes to a hardware startup, we're treating it the same way. Like startups, they always say like, fail fast and break things, right? Or fail fast and something fast. I always forget it. But with hardware startups, you know, it's even harder. And so if you're going to launch something, you're going to make sure it's right. Like, you don't even want to get to product and market if it's not going to work. And so, you know, that's why hardware startups go under so many more times before they're even in the market, right? Because ultimately the technology fails. So we knew we had to make sure the technology worked. So the very first thing we did is we built basically a Frankenstein thing. It was essentially a month in. We bought a toaster oven. We bought a mini freezer. And we literally, in my friend's basement, hacked it apart. And we were like not doing things properly. Like, for when we were cutting through the side of this freezer, we used a button-down shirt and sunglasses as our protective gear as sparks were flying everywhere.
Nice. You know, hopefully there's a picture of that somewhere.
There is a video somewhere of that, or a picture. And we're doing this, and, you know, we cut a line on the refrigerant, and refrigerant's leaking through the air, and we're like running outside. We're like, okay, Googling, is refrigerant hazardous to breathe? Like, you know, it's really like, you know, in your garage type mentality. But, you know, after all that, we learned how to program on a Pi to hook motors up to it and all that. And we did it. We built basically a toaster oven and a freezer that had conveyor belts in it that could transfer. It was very ugly, but we proved that we could hack into the systems and control it all from a central computer. And if you can control it from a central computer, you can control it over Wi-Fi. All right, that's an easier concept. So that was the first thing we did within the first 6 months. And we are here 6 years later. We're getting ready to launch our beta. We sold out a beta experience. So we're actually starting a fundraise right now to fund the beta units, the 100 units that are going to go out there for people to start using, for chefs to make food for. But through that time, we built 10 units that went from our very first alpha unit to the most recent beta unit that is production grade, where the things we're tweaking is like, if this is being mass produced, like making sure people assemble in the right order, writing down order of operations. I even have a time-lapse video that I've recorded of myself building one of the beta versions two or three times ago, where I took 12 straight hours of video of me building this thing, condensed it down to a 30-second build video.
Wow. So after that part, I mean, and when you start to focus on the food aspect, so what actually is, you know, the end result here? Did you guys have to consult somebody else? Because just looking through the website and checking out the things that you guys have for breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, desserts, all of those, they look delicious. I mean, it's not just like you're, you know, something basic that you might would expect to, you know, like you were alluding to a little while ago, like a Hot Pocket. It's nothing. I mean, it's everything looks so good. So did you guys have to consult somebody there to make sure that everything comes out as an end product the way you want?
Yeah. So first and foremost, we don't make food. We're not a food company at all. My wife doesn't let me cook. When I first met her, I was like, I love cooking. And I cooked her a meal. And she's like, you're never cooking for me again.
No more.
Yeah. But, you know, what we view this as a Keurig model, as mentioned. So we are partnering with multiple food companies because what we're offering these chefs is, you know, when a chef makes a meal that gets shipped to their home, it's no longer in their control. So if someone burns it, if someone undercooks it, they just go, oh, that chef made a terrible meal. But now they program how it cooks. And so it's now as if they were in your kitchen cooking it for you. So now the chefs, the people who make these meals, love our product because it lets the user actually experience the meal the way they would want you to experience it as a chef without the time constraint. Because the reason a lot of people have problems with food is you have to defrost it, time commitment. You have to preheat the oven, time commitment. You have to cook it for upwards of an hour, sometimes 2 hours to do it. You have to take foil off or change the style of cooking partway through or change temperatures. And it's just such a huge commitment to get that high quality meal. You know, I think the first sentence into what I was saying, someone already was like, I'm going to throw it in the microwave. Right. But the chef wants that. And it's kind of like, I can vacuum a room in 15 minutes or a Roomba could do it, but it's going to take like 3 hours and get stuck half the time. But I didn't have to vacuum and my room is clean. Same concept, right? Let's cook food for how long and the proper way to get a good meal. And there's just no time. So the partner food companies do it. So that's why you get such delicious looking meals, because it's as if it was cooked in a restaurant in your house. Now, one thing I want to bring up is I've said Frozen a number of times. And normally people hear Frozen, they're like, ah, Frozen, it's not fresh fruit. But we went with Frozen for a lot of reasons. And it was an active decision early on. Do we do fresh? Do we do Frozen? And we ultimately landed on Frozen because we did the impact analysis of what our consumer cares about, right? Our consumer cares about the environment. They care about nutritional quality. And they care about end product quality. And when you do frozen food, and this is something I have to learn, and chefs do it all the time, the key thing about how to make frozen food taste as good, if not better than fresh, has to do with how you freeze it and how you defrost it. And if those are controlled properly, it will taste better than a fresh meal. And it has to do with how quickly it's frozen and how slowly it's defrosted, having to do with the ice crystals and how that breaks apart protein. And again, out of my league on the science there, but they know what they're doing. And you let the experts do it and you let the automation do it, and then it's not a problem. So then you look at what the consumer cares about. 8 times less food waste on frozen food versus fresh food. You have nutritional quality, right? So in a fresh meal, 50% of the nutritional density is lost within the first 24 hours. But on frozen food, that maintains up to 7 months. And to that point, fresh food expires within 2 weeks, while a frozen meal has a 12-month lifespan. Because that same blast freezing process that makes those micro food ice crystals also takes all the natural sugars and proteins of the meal and uses that as a natural preservative. So you're not adding extra preservatives and salts and things like that. You're actually using the natural farm to fresh ingredients to preserve the food.
Oh, that's fabulous. And so where did the name Celsi come from? What is that?
And so this is probably the least entertaining thing. It's a derivative of the word Celsius, right?
Nice.
Ultimately, Celsi was our third iteration of our name through the journey. We used to be called Sous Chef. Before that, we called ourselves Brewster, was an internal name at one point. I forget what other names we had, like Auto Chef, like in multiple iterations. But Celsi, we were fortunate enough to get brought into a venture studio about a year and a half, 2 years ago. Actually almost 2.5 years ago. But they did marketing as part of their investment. And so they went through the whole process of helping us do branding and everything with, like, what is our brand DNA? What is the purpose of what we're doing? And even down to the colors, like what colors evoke both technology advancements and hunger and things like that. Part of that was coming with a name. And I'll be honest, Celsi was not our first choice of the names they provided. But if you look at Celsi from a business perspective, it was trademarkable. We were able to actually get a 5-letter domain, so Celsi.com, at a ridiculously cheap price for a domain of 5 letters.
Those barely exist. Yeah, right, that's exactly. Huge.
So when you have like trademarkability, the website, that nothing else is using this name, it just made sense as a name. And you know, there's rationale behind it. We wanted a name that was like Siri or Google, like or Alexa. Like, we wanted it to be like something you're talking to, because we want to be able to say like, hey, Celsi, make my dinner, like things like that, or Celsi made my dinner last night. And we wanted to have that kind of colloquial talk with the unit. And so that's where Celsi is. And Celsius works, right? The freezer is one side of the Celsius spectrum. It's sitting at negative 20 Celsius, and the oven's going, you know, upwards of like 300 Celsius when it's doing its auto cleaning. So, you know.
Wow. Well, Max, this has been fantastic. Tell people how they can keep up with you, follow Celsius, all the great stuff that you guys have coming down the line.
Yep. So we, unfortunately, Celsi is actually people's names. All of our handles on social media are at Celsi Life. One word, CelsiLife. We have Celsi Life on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter/X, and LinkedIn. We're most active on LinkedIn. That's kind of where we are at the early stage of the business. Check out our website. As I said, we did a beta pre-sale that we already closed out because we sold out. We may do another one. We've done Kickstarters in the past. We've done other crowdfunding, but following us on social media or going to our website and signing up to follow us. You can put your email in and get direct emails from us. We don't send a lot. We send them maybe once every 2 months because we don't want to bombard you. But that's the easiest way to follow along.
Heck yeah. Well, I'll make sure that all of those are linked in the description so that people can keep up with you guys, follow you on social, check out all the amazing things you're doing. But thanks so much for your time tonight. This has been fantastic.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of How to Ride a Roller Coaster. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing, leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform, and connecting on social. You can subscribe and follow on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Real David Ezell. To learn more about being a guest on the show, go to realdavidezell.com to find out more. Until next time.